your body can go much further than what you think. With the right work and with a lot of passion and a lot of effort, you might achieve things that you thought you wouldn't. And you learn to deal with difficult situations. You learn to deal with pressure. You learn to be calm when things are tough or not going as planned because maybe you're not having a good day or whatever. So you learn to be patient and know that with effort and with work, you can achieve anything pretty much.
All right, welcome back or welcome to the Finding Mastery podcast. I am Michael Gervais, and by trade and training, I'm a sport and performance psychologist. And the whole idea behind these conversations is to learn from people who are on the path of mastery to better understand the deep stuff, the good stuff. What are they searching for? What are they craving? What are they working to understand? And that really is part of their psychological framework. And then we want to understand the mental skills that they've used to build and refine their craft. Finding Mastery is brought to you by listening. This is exactly what their app does. It helps you listen to books and content that you might not be able to sit down and actually have the time to read. There was a time early in my career where I remember sitting in the back hallways of my university and being in the library for hours, reading all of the sports psychology literature and research that I could get my hands on. I loved it. I cherished it. The field of sports psychology is just absolutely on a bender right now. It is growing so fast. It is nearly impossible to keep up with all of the research that's coming out. So that's why I love what listening is doing. It's a game changer for me. So the listening app, it lets me listen to anything that's in writing while I'm on the go. Everything from academic papers to books, PDFs, web pages, articles, anything that I put in their app, it reads it to me. It narrates to me. And plus their AI is great. The way that the interface sounds, like, of course, it's not a human that's reading, but it kind of, the AI is so good of what they're doing, it just works. And then there's also this note-taking function. They know that people like us like to take notes. And so it's as simple as when I hear a key idea, I instantly press a button and that section is saved. They've done a really nice job with this product and they've got a great offer for us. Usually they only give a 2-week trial, but because you are listening to Finding Mastery, you get a whole month for free. Check that out, a whole month for free. So I want to encourage you to go check it out. listening.com/findingmastery or use the code findingmastery at checkout to get started. Again, it's listening.com/findingmastery or use the code findingmastery at checkout to get 1 month completely free. Finding Mastery is brought to you by Hims. Hims is changing men's healthcare by providing simple, convenient, and affordable access to science-informed treatments for erectile dysfunction, known as ED. They also are servicing hair loss, weight loss, and more. Health struggles like ED, they're common, but they can be hard to talk about when it comes to finding a solution. That's why Hims has been a game changer for so many men. The entire process is 100% online. Answer a series of questions on their site, and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option for you. If prescribed, your medication ships directly to you for free in a discreet package. No waiting rooms, no pharmacy visits, and no insurance is needed. Plus, you can manage your plan directly on the Hims app. You can track progress and learn more about your conditions and how to treat them from leading medical experts. If you or a loved one has been struggling with ED, I really want to encourage you to go check out Hims. I know ED often has a psychological component to it as well. So be sure that you're stacking some psychological best practices into your daily routine. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/findingmastery. That's Hims, HIMS.com/findingmastery for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/findingmastery. Disclaimer, hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. All right, this week's conversation is with Javier Gomez, a Spanish triathlete. And since 2006, Javier, known as Javi, has accumulated one of the best records in triathlon history. He is a 5-times International Triathlete Union, ITU, world champion, 2-time Ironman and the 70.3 world champion, a 9-time world ITU number one, and won a silver medal for Spain at the 2012 Olympics in men's triathlon. I mean, simply put, he is a legend in the sport. And Javi is currently in the final stages of training for the Ironman World Championships, which will take place on October 13th in Kona, the legendary Kona, Hawaii triathlon. And so for those unfamiliar with an Ironman, it is grueling. It consists of a 2.4-mile swim. It's out in the ocean, 112-mile bike ride, and then to top it off, a marathon, 26.2 miles for a marathon run. No matter how you slice it, this endurance event is rugged. It is ridiculous. And that's why I was so excited to talk to Javier about his experience and how he preps and trains for it. And last year's winner completed the race in just over 8 hours. But imagine 8 hours, a full work day, where your heart rate is pounding through your chest, where it feels like there's a stove inside of you that your body is so heated up. And that's a lot of time to be able to manage your interior world. And that's just race day. That doesn't include what training looks like on a regular basis. So Javi shares how he manages both positive and negative thoughts, his process for remaining calm, and how he overcomes that intense pain during competition. So there's so much in here, so much more than just what it takes to perform at the highest level for a triathlon. This is really about life endurance. This is about managing the inner experience for all of us. And so much of what goes into training and succeeding in endurance sports, it's applicable for us all. It requires persistence, resiliency, an appreciation for the nuances inside the process, and a willingness to play the long game. So with that, let's jump right into this conversation with Javier Gomez. Javi, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good. Where in the world are you today?
I'm in Spain, in a town called Cáceres, toward the south of Spain, in training camp.
And okay, so what do your training camps look like? Because you're training right now for Kona, is that right?
Yeah, that's the biggest race of the year for me, and it's my first time going to the World Championships in Kona. So this is the final preparation for that race. So we chose this place because it's pretty hot. Like the weather is really, really hot. Like similar conditions to what we're going to find in Kona in 1 month. So yeah, doing the final preparations for that.
Okay, good. So let's do this. So I think that some people that are listening might not be familiar with what the World Championships for Ironmans are. You know, what is an Ironman? What does it mean to be invited or included in the World Championships, you know, at the legendary race of Kona? So let's do a little history there, yeah, right at the top. And then let's go back to, like, why in the world did you get into extreme distance endurance, you know, like I want to go back there. Okay. So let's do a top view of Ironman in general and what it means to go to Kona.
Well, Ironman in general, it's the longest distance in triathlon, and it's 3.8 kilometers swim, 180 kilometers bike, and 42 kilometers of full marathon run. And Kona has been traditionally the most important of those Ironman, and it's the official world championships. And in a really extreme environment in terms of weather conditions, really hot, really humid, and racing against the best in the world. It's not only the distance itself that it's hard to do, but do it faster than everyone else, which is that's the challenge and the most difficult of all of this.
Okay, so, and then some people aren't familiar with kilometers, and some of us are still stuck in the miles. So it's 2.4 miles in the ocean.
True.
Right?
Yeah.
112 miles on the bike.
Yeah.
And then that's right. 26.2 marathon at the to cap it off.
Yeah.
Okay, so all right. Why do this to yourself?
Why? Good question. Why? I started, I don't know, as a kid, I was very active and I started in sport through the swimming in the swim club in my hometown. And when I was 15, I just decided that I wanted to try a new sport called triathlon that I wasn't really sure what it was about. But some friends convinced me to do my first one much shorter than the Ironman distance. It was what we call Olympic distance, 1.5 kilometers swim and 40K bike and 10K run. And even though it was a tough experience, I loved the sport from the beginning. And yeah, I guess I had some good ability, some talent or whatever, and put a lot of work and got better and better, and you know, it became my job. And luckily, for the last 15 to 20 years, I have been racing all over the world as a professional athlete with some good results, and I'm still enjoying it. And at this point in my career, as I'm getting older, I guess it's a natural step to step up to longer distances. And now my main goal is this Ironman in Hawaii.
Yeah. Okay. Are you more natural in the water, on the bike, or running?
That's a good question, because at the beginning I was more natural in the water because of my swimming background. But as my training progressed and I got better, I think I could be pretty similar in all three. But now I'm trying to be stronger on the bike and also on the run, because just because of the fact that swimming, you only swim for 50 minutes in an Ironman, but cycling, you're going to be cycling for 4.5 hours, and you're going to run a full marathon, which will take about 2 hours 30 something, 2 hours 40. So you need to be really consistent on the bike and have a lot of endurance on that final run.
Okay, so world class time, is that around, if I add it up, is that around 6 hours?
It will be about 8 hours.
8 hours.
Four and a half.
Okay.
Yeah, plus 8 hours in a tough race like Kona. In other races, people go under 8 hours. But yeah, Kona is very, very special. So it's not a flat course. It's very windy, and the heat is brutal there. So it's not a fast race, what we would call a fast race.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. And again, I want to go back to why. And I know that that's the obvious question you get asked all the time, and but I'd like to hear it from you. Like, why do you? What is it about distance and endurance that is fascinating to you?
Well, I love the. I guess it was also my natural ability. I realized when I was in school that there were some kids faster than me when we were running in shorter distances, but I was faster than them and had more endurance than most of them when we had to run for a longer period. And I was always fascinated by endurance sports like cycling, running, swimming. I don't know, where other in my swim club, I remember most of the kids, they wanted to do like shorter events, like 100 meters, 50 meters. Really fast, and I was more interested in longer distances because it was my natural talent. And it's there's something about the challenge and about the physical pain that you have to hold for longer that to athletes like me, that's very exciting and really challenging. So we want to do it.
It's very exciting. Like, I'm training right now. I'm laughing because I don't find it exciting, and I'm training right now for it's about a 30-mile ocean paddle, and it's a stand-up paddle. It's about 30 miles, and world-class records around 5.5 hours, and I'm sure I'm going to come in around 7.5, 8, you know, and it's hard. It's just hard.
It's hard, and it's very challenging for sure, but when you see yourself improving, progressing, and when you finally achieve your goal, it's very rewarding, I guess. And that's what we really like more than the pain itself, that you don't really enjoy it when you're suffering, but you know why you do it, you know what you want to achieve and what drives you to try to get better.
Okay, let's go into that for you. What is it that you're trying to understand, unlock, experience? Those three words are important to me. What are you trying to understand, unlock, and experience?
I don't know. I guess it got to a point that this is my job and this is what I do, and I just love doing it. But I think endurance sport like this, it makes you understand your body much better and the way you function and what you can achieve. Try to find your limits or get as close as possible to them and get to know yourself better, I guess, and under stress, under tough conditions and under the pressure of a race and all those kind of things.
What have you come to understand about yourself? Because yes, you spend a lot of time with yourself in Mother Nature, right? And there's something I want to call it almost magical when we are immersed in, you know, the wild. There's something really amazing about that. But what is it that you've come to understand about yourself?
Well, you get to understand that your body can go much further than what you think. Like, things that seem impossible, they are not. With the right work and with a lot of passion and a lot of effort, you might achieve things that you thought you wouldn't. And you learn to deal with difficult situations. You learn to deal with pressure. You learn to be calm when things are tough or not going as planned because, I don't know, maybe you're not having a good day or whatever. So you learn to be patient and know that with effort and with work, everything, you can achieve anything pretty much.
Okay, cool. Because you talk about learning, like you learn to be calm, you learn to deal with pressure, you learn to deal with setbacks, you learn that you can go much further than you thought possible, what is potentially impossible at one point in time. So if you learn it, that means that it's a skill. And I'm going to nod my head for sure that all of those are skills. And then the gold dust is really how do you train those skills? So there's like the old school way, which is just put yourself in difficult situations and figure it out, kid. And then, right? And then we can use some modern science, which is to deconstruct each one of those mental skills and say, okay, well, and this is now a question to you, not like the world, but like, how do you deal with staying calm when it's hard? What is it that you do? What's the skill you employ?
I guess it's a mix of different things. Obviously, experience when you've been through tough situations many times, and that helps. You know, you learn to stay calm. You learn that you might feel bad now, or the training session didn't go as planned, or the race is not going as planned, but you know that anything, you know, things can change and get better. You have to keep pushing, keep focused. And also you use science, of course, in your training. You work with, in my case, you work with professionals that help you in different areas, whether it's training, recovery, and some people also work with psychologists to help them with mental strength to overcome problems and be mentally stronger. So there are different tools that you have to use, and depending on your character, the type of person you are, in order to make you stronger and make you better.
Okay, so what I heard in there is that you use a optimistic framework, right? So you're grounded in it's going to get better. Like, this is hard right now. I'm suffering, but I want to do this, and it's going to get better after I get through this difficult experience.
Yeah,
this difficult time.
I guess you have to think on your ultimate goal and know why you're doing this, and you have to be patient and go through that crisis or that through that tough time, thinking and hoping that a better one will come. And in a race, you always tend to think that your rivals are much fresher, much easier than you when you're struggling. But in the end of the day, everyone has the same fears, the same problems, and the same suffering. So you have to think that you can be stronger than them mentally. And most of the times, or many times, it's a mental game in the end. The one who can hold the pain for a bit longer is going to be the winner in a professional sport. So you need to be prepared and you need to be ready for that.
Oh, I love that. Okay, so the one that holds the pain longer. Okay, hold on that thought in just a minute, because that's a cool thought, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's not fun though, but if it was easy, everyone would do the same, so.
Yeah, so, but that's part, it's not lost on me that you also said the second part is that you've got a team, you know, physiologists, of trainers, nutrition. I don't know if you work with psychologists or not, but that's a big part of the game. So I want to put a pin in that for just a moment and come back to holding the suffering longer. So what do you do to hold suffering?
I believe a lot in my training and my work. So when I know that I'm well prepared, when I train a lot for a race, then I have the confidence in the race during the race. And when in those tough times, I think of all those, you know, all the training sessions I did, all the suffer I went through on training, and I know that the sessions eventually went well. So I think of all that, and that, you know, gives me the confidence to believe that I can keep pushing, keep going for a bit longer, because I'm prepared for that. You know, it's not something magical. It's not something like I'm trying to do something impossible. No, I just believe that I'm prepared for that, so I'm going to do it.
Okay, I want to talk to you about a new sponsor right here, Hydro. I love what they're doing. They are awesome. I don't know if you're into rowing like I am. I really enjoy it. What I try to do is I try to move around different cardio exercises. Sometimes on a bike, sometimes I'm rowing, sometimes I'm outside. But when I want to row, they've got it dialed in. They've done something fundamentally different than all the other rowers. One, it's not this loud machine that is making a ton of noise and, you know, chains slapping all over the place. They've done this in a really slick, premium, elevated way. And then the other thing they've done is that there's a nice screen that you can have a guide or a coach with you. And their coaches are Olympians and world-class athletes. And what they've done is they're filming, full stop, they are filming all over the world on places where their experts are rowing, and then you get to go with them. And they're coaching you the whole way. I love it. My favorite coach by far is Mac. She's great. And I just want to encourage you to give them a shot. If you love rowing, I think you're going to love this machine. And if you're not into rowing, I don't know if you know this, but rowing, there's been some research around rowing that rowing engages over 80% of your muscles while you're doing it. So it's a really efficient exercise. This spring, join the growing rowing community at Hydro. Head over to hydro.com and use the code MASTERY to save up to $400 off your Hydro. That's hydro.com, HYDROW.com, and use the code MASTERY to save up to $400. Hydro.com, use the code MASTERY. Finding Mastery is brought to you by AG1. It's really important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality. And that's why for almost a decade now, I've been drinking AG1. When I first was connected with them, I thought, oh, this is great. This is great. And then I double-clicked to understand their process and how they went about it. And I just love the rigor that goes into what they're creating and the product that they have. And they've gone through so many iterations to get it just right, 52 of them to be exact. Sometimes quality can be a buzzword, but they are committed. They are fundamentally committed to have a great product for us. They're interested in absorption. They're interested in high quality manufacturing. They rigorously test their product. So I trust what's in AG1. And one of the reasons I have extra confidence in that statement is they are NSF certified for sport. That's one of the most rigorous independent quality and safety certification programs in the supplement industry. They've made it so easy as well. What I do every morning is I take a scoop, put it into a cup of water, shake it up, and it's the first thing that I put in my stomach. I love it. It just gives me the sense like, okay, I've invested in my health and I haven't even started my day yet. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, I want to encourage you to go check out AG1. So try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/findingmastery. Again, that's drinkag1.com/findingmastery. I hope you go check them out. Let's go to training right now to like take it out of competition. But when you're in training mode and you're suffering in training, it's one of those grindy mid distance, you know, moderate paced or whatever, that's just kind of grindy for you. And you're feeling that ache and pain and that toaster inside of you that is just basically overheating, you know, your internal cavity. At least I'm starting to relate to that feeling. I don't know if that's true for you. Is that true for you?
Yeah, it is. You go through that many times,
Yep. And then, so what do you say to yourself? Where do you take your mind during those moments?
Well, sometimes setting smaller goals help. You know, if you are, let's say, covering a certain distance and it feels too far for the pace you're holding, you try to say, okay, let's get through another K and then another one, and then get some mental strategies and know that after that turn, it's going to be a slightly downhill, so you can recover a little bit and recharge for the next part, and just break the distance, for example, in the smaller parts, and try to not think too far ahead, but just focus on one thing at a time. And if you are well prepared, usually you can go through it, you know, or sometimes it's smarter to slow down a little bit and try to recover to face the last part of the event or the training or whatever. So, yeah, you have to be smart and try to think what's right to do every time, which is not easy when you're suffering and when your heart rate is 180. It's not easy to take the right decisions sometimes, but that's a matter of practice, like almost everything.
Wait a minute. Your heart rate is up at 180 when you're racing?
Well, mine, I think, doesn't go that high anymore, but
I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah, so it can go pretty high. It depends on the distance and the intensity. For Ironman races, not so high because it's such a long time that you cannot hold it for so long. But for some training sessions, some intense workouts, it could be, yeah.
And then, so during, let's go flip back to race day. What is your average heart rate? What's the ranges that you're in for most of the 7 hours, 6 hours?
It could be for me. My heart rate is pretty low generally comparing to other people, and it doesn't really mean anything, but I guess about 145 to 150 maybe for okay. such a long race. But other people can hold 170 or 165 for the whole way. So it's more depending on what's your max, you know.
Okay. Oh, wow. That's pretty intense, because as I'm training right now, like it's the noticeable difference between 140 and 155. Like I can... It's like, ooh, I'm up in a whole different zone now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It changes, and like, yeah, 3 or 4 heart rate beats more or less can really keep, maybe that's the difference between being able to keep going for 1 more hour or 2 more hours than not. So, yeah, you have to know yourself very well.
Okay. And for somebody, like, I don't really know. This is the first time I've done anything at distance, any endurance. I'd rather huck myself off a 20-foot vertical in the backcountry of somewhere on skis than do this, right? And so, but I want to understand what you're coming to understand. So I'm in the thick of it right now. And if my event is about 7.5 hours, let's just say,
yeah,
where would you imagine, and maybe you can't even say this, right? But where would you imagine my target heart rate to be most of the time if in training I'm ranging between 130 and 160?
Yeah, well, yes, everyone's different, but I guess you need to find your pace and the heart rate that is good for you for such a long event. And usually what happens in my events that people tend to blow up towards the end. So if you're smart, if you save energy for the last, let's say, 2 hours of the event, you usually are going to go much faster generally. So it's a long day. It's a long way. So take it easy at the beginning and save for the second half of the event.
That sounds like a pro, right? Such a rookie move to come out of the gates flying, you know? Yeah. Okay. All right.
That's the idea, but sometimes it's not easy to do it because, you know, in a long competition, you go through so many emotions and you feel good and you feel bad and you feel good again. And you have moments when you feel good and you tend to push too hard and then you feel bad and then the negative thoughts come to your mind and you slow down. So yeah, it's sometimes could be a bit of a roller coaster.
And what do you do with, what are the themes of negative thoughts for you? Before we get to like what you do with them, like they fall in buckets, right? Like self-critical, self-doubt, whatever. I don't know, but what are your themes?
Yeah, it's not easy that, but I think you experienced that on training before. So I tried to think that I've been in that situation before. And usually if you keep going, things will get better or you get to a part of the race that suits you more or suits you better. So I just try to don't think too much, but keep focusing, in my case, one step at a time, or okay, focus on my, you know, on the bike and how I apply the power to the pedals, or like small things that, so I don't think much of how bad I am feeling or something like that.
Yes, you lock in to the small details, the actual present moment activity, and that occupies your mind rather than thinking about how hard, you know, how bad your feet feel or how bad your whatever feels.
Yeah, yeah. When you're going through a tough time, probably it's better not to think too much far ahead, but focus more on the moment, on little things, on your technique, on your stroke or your step or whatever, but not too much, just until you feel a bit better.
Okay. And what is it? Let's go back to that top question, like experience. What are you trying to experience? What are you trying to unlock? So what is it that you're trying to unlock within yourself, or unlock? I don't want to narrow it just to yourself, but what are you trying to unlock?
Well, I don't know. I guess it's a challenge for myself, trying to prove that I'm able to do something that I want to do, or if I have a goal, whether it's a race or whatever it is, I want to prove that I can do it, and that what makes me feel good. So that ability of overcoming problems is what drives me sometimes.
And is your nutrition 2 days before, is it, what do you do then? What do you do the couple of days or couple of nights before?
Well, I guess I'm in a carb loading the 2-3 days before the race. So I try to eat healthy or quite plain, like not many sauces or things that can be heavy or hard to digest, but make sure that I take enough carbs, especially, and also some protein, but nothing special really, like a good plate of pasta, some, let's say, grilled chicken or something like that. Even though I like to eat vegetables and I eat lots of those, I try to avoid them the 2-3 days before the race, just to make sure my stomach, my gut works well, and I'm loaded and full for an 8 hours event.
Mm-hmm. And are you, just on a general kind of note, are you taking supplements or probiotics, or are you taking things to support you?
Not really. Sometimes I do. I do blood tests every 2-3 months, and if there's something, a lack of whatever, say iron or something, then I would take a supplement. But otherwise, I believe more in a healthy, balanced diet, and make sure I eat good product, good stuff, and enough. And if there's any need of supplement, then I would take it. Otherwise, I don't.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I've really valued the blood work to tell, right? Rather than me guessing. It's like, look at the bloods, and then you can tell, like, okay, this is what's working, this is what's not working, and here's some, you know, thoughtful ways to course correct.
Yeah, I think it's good to always also for that have someone who can advise you, like a professional, for sure, of what you should tell you or what you shouldn't. But I think the base is having a good nutrition habits, and then if there's any lack, just try to get the supplement to fill that. Yeah.
Okay. Do you have a family structure? Are you married? Do you have kids? Is that?
I'm going to get married in December. I have my girlfriend. We're getting married this December. So yeah, excited about it. Don't have kids yet.
Not yet. Yeah. Okay. Because for me, that's one of the challenges, is like managing time.
Yeah, I can imagine. As I said, I know other triathletes, other colleagues who have families, and it's not easy. This involves a lot of traveling, a lot of time training, and yeah, it could be quite challenging to find a balance between a family and professional sport. But I guess a lot of people can do it. So it's, I guess it's just a matter of getting organized and having support as well from your partner. That's very important.
Yeah. Okay. So early days for you, what was it like growing up?
Yeah, I was lucky that I always had a great support from my parents. my dad especially was really into sport, and he encouraged me to practice sport. He would take me to training sessions, to events, to competitions, and he was very supportive, my mom as well. And I surrounded myself with a group of friends who were into sport as well. So that environment was quite good in order to practice sport, you know. So I think I was quite lucky, and I met my first coach as well, who was a very important person for me for my first 10 years of my sports career. And he's an amazing man, and I learned a lot from him in terms of training or competitions and stuff. So I was lucky, and you need to be a bit lucky when you're a kid, because if you don't surround yourself with the right people, you probably will choose a different path and do different stuff. But I was lucky that I was in a very sporty environment.
Was it competitive? Was it supportive? Was it aggressive? Was it cooperative? What was the tone of your group?
No, not aggressive, competitive, because we were doing competition, like in a smaller scale, more local stuff. But for you, when you go to your first competition, even though it might be like just a local event for you, I used to get more nervous back then than now when I'm racing world championships. So, you put that pressure on yourself, and it's something good. It doesn't have to be bad. But I always had the support of my family, regardless of the results. You know, they never really asked for results or be like junior champion or anything like that. All that came quite natural because I trained, because I loved what I was doing. But I never felt really pressure from my environment, from people around me to achieve. You know, the pressure came later, obviously, because when you become professional, then you have to perform, and you have sponsors, and you have people around, and then you need to get the results. But when I was a kid, I never felt any of that.
What a gift mom and dad gave you.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Everything seemed quite natural for me when I was at that age. When I see it now and I see other kids, maybe it's not that natural and that common, but I guess it also depends on you as a kid, you know. I was competing since I was 12 or 13 years old, but I always knew my goals were later on in my career, you know, that I was only a kid, and I didn't care much about the results back then, but I wanted to be a good athlete in the future.
Brilliant. Okay. And so the goal as a young kid, or the vision, was for you to be a professional athlete. And did you have an idea that, did I get that wrong?
No. Well, yeah, I guess I wanted to be a professional athlete, but it seems so far away when you're a kid, you know. And I was always quite realistic, and even though I wanted to be a professional, I always knew that it was going to be very difficult and would probably never get that far. But so I was focused and, you know, training day by day, always try to study at the same time. And as I got better and better and started to win local races, then more national races, I went to international competitions, and it got to a point when I was under 23 world champion that I realized that I had a good potential in this sport to be a professional and do well. But it's not that I was 12 years old and I thought I'm going to be a professional world champion. No, I was just working for it slowly and, you know, step by step, never too aggressive, never, I don't know, always with my feet on the ground. But I guess with work, things, I just got better, and that kind of dream became true or closer, you know, as I grew up.
Beautiful. And what are some of those, you sound really grounded, like super connected to the long game, the game of life, rather than the game of grabbing medals and trophies, which you've done plenty of those. And so what are some of those guiding principles that support you and keep you, you know, your nose pointed in the right direction and your feet firmly on the ground?
Well, I guess the fact that I was doing what I liked, you know, what I wanted to do. You sometimes when you have big race, you obviously think of the rewarding and the medals and what it would mean to be world champion, all that. But it's just the fact of being doing what you want to do and what you like. I like training every day. That's what I did when I was a kid and what I did in my free time after school. And now that's what I do as a job. So I can't complain, you know. So I think enjoying the process is very important, or as important as the medals and the winning races. Obviously, when you're a professional, you need to win and you need to do well in order to survive and be able to be a professional. But you have to keep that same spirit that when you're a kid and you just do it for fun and because you like what you're doing. You shouldn't forget that, you know. That sometimes it could be easy to forget because there's so many things around and so much pressure that could put you in a situation that you don't enjoy the sport that much, you know. I've seen a lot of people struggling with that. And sometimes even myself, I forget about it a little bit. But then you slow down and you think, why are you doing this? And you love what you're doing, you know. I love going out and train and try to be better every day. And yeah, I just try not to think much about the medals and the races, but focus on the process and day by day try to get better.
Okay. And then let's say that somebody doesn't completely love what they do. They're doing it as a profession, you know, they're a professional, whatever, in a corporation or whatever. They don't completely love it, but they want to do great. They want to push in their potential in that environment. So I think it's amazing. Your framework is that this is what I did as a kid. Like, are you kidding me? Now they're paying me? This is awesome.
Yeah.
You know, and so that love and that joy and that clarity helps drive that intrinsic motivation for you.
Yeah, what I've seen in other people who might be very talented, but if you don't have the passion and if you don't really like what you're doing, it won't last long. I've seen a lot of people, like, amazingly talented, definitely more than me, like doing well for a year or two, and then just they can't keep the same intensity on training, and they just, or they're just interested on different stuff, and they. Their lives go in a different way. So I guess to last in the sport and to do well for a long time, you need to be passionate and you need to enjoy what you're doing. You cannot really do it because you're a professional, this is your job, and you get money because of this, because this requires a lot of sacrifice, a lot of training, and say no to lots of things as well. So you really have to like it.
Finding Master is brought to you by Apollo Neuro. By now, you're probably well aware that I am a huge fan of what they're doing. I love what they're building and how they're using science-backed technology to help people flourish. This is just a great technology that isn't measuring something. It's actually providing a state change for you to help you either downregulate, find a deeper sense of calm, maybe fall asleep a little bit easier. And if you want to be a bit more up and animated, they've got a way to help you do that as well. It's awesome. It works by sending silent, soothing vibrations. They call them Apollo vibes, of course. That's fun. And it's like music that you can just feel. Just like music, higher vibrations help improve your energy and focus, while lower vibrations, slower vibrations, help to reduce stress, help you relax. I use it twice a day. I use it after I do something really intense. So after it's a lift, after some fitness, after some sport, or after something I'm doing in the office. And I use it right before I go to bed. The science that they've found is fascinating. Across various real world and clinical trials, Apollo wearable users experience up to 40% less stress and feelings of anxiety. That's an average, of course. 19% more time in deep sleep, 11% increase in HRV, heart rate variability, and up to 25% more focus and concentration. Those are radical. And because you're a part of the Finding Mastery community, you're going to get an exclusive, and I mean that word here, 15% off an Apollo wearable. So just head to apolloneuro.com/findingmastery and use the code Finding Mastery at checkout. This is an exclusive offer only available to Finding Mastery. I love that we get to do this together. So be sure to use our code. Again, APOLLONEURO, apolloneuro.com/findingmastery, or use the code findingmastery at checkout for 15% off your purchase. You're only getting that here. I really hope you'll check them out. Finding Mastery is brought to you by AquaTrue. We all know how important hydration is to performance and recovery and well-being, but it's not just about how much you drink. The quality of your water plays a big role. And if you're like me and you don't fully trust tap water, and I think for good reason, research by the Environmental Working Group has shown that 3 out of 4 homes in the U.S. have harmful contaminants in tap water. That's why I'm really excited to introduce AquaTrue. Their purifiers use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process, and their countertop purifiers remove 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters. It's incredible. I can literally taste the difference in my water. Plus, the filters are affordable and long-lasting. Just one set of filters from their classic purifier makes the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water. That adds up to less than 3 cents per bottle. It feels great to know that all at once, I'm saving money, getting the highest quality water for the Finding Mastery team, and helping make a positive impact on the environment by eliminating single-use plastics all the way around. AquaTrue comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and it even makes a great gift. And right now, because you're a Finding Mastery listener, you receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. So just go to AquaTrue.com. You spell it AquaTrue.com and enter the code Finding Mastery at checkout. Again, that's AquaTrue.com. Enter the Finding Mastery code at checkout to receive 20% off any purifier that you buy there.
And if there were, say, 5 people that sit at your board of directors for life, right? So there's an imaginary table and there's 5 people sitting at the table plus you, or 4 people plus you, you know, whatever number we have here. And who are those people that are, and they could be dead, they could be alive, it doesn't much matter, but who do you bring to the table as guiding philosophies and principle-based people that help you become your best?
Who would I bring to that table?
Mm-hmm. Like that you already have your community, right? Like who are they?
Well, for sure, mainly the people that work with me and my girlfriend, who is very supportive, and he's a triathlete as well, and she understands what I do, and my coach. He's been doing my training program and guiding me for a few years already. The physio who works with me and also trains with me sometimes, it's my inner circle, people who I trust, you know, my manager as well, who more important, they are all friends, you know, it's not only like people who work for me, but like friends, that people that I get along with.
Oh, okay. And then let's just go through a couple of them. What does your girlfriend stand for? What does she represent to you that is so attractive that you would bring her to the table?
Well, because she's probably my best friend, you know, not only my girlfriend, but she understands what I do. She sees me training every day. She knows the sport very well too. And she's just very helpful, you know, even though she has her own goals and her own plans in terms of achieving in the sport as well. But there are certain periods of training that I need a lot of, a lot of help from my people. And she's always there. And she's very supportive. And when I'm not training or when I can just forget about the sport for a bit, it's a great person to hang out with. You know, we really enjoy being together.
Okay, perfect. And so it's more support and fun and understanding. Yeah. And then how about your coach? What does he stand for?
Well, my coach, it's even though he has only been working with me for 4 or 5 years, actually, when I did my first triathlon back in 1998, he was competing as well. So we know each other for a long time, and we've been friends for a long time. So it's important for me. It was important when I decided to train with him that he already knew the way I worked or the way my personality and how I do things. And he's very he has knowledge, obviously, but he's very flexible as well. He understands me very well. And we spend so much time together that it's important that we get along well. You know, this is not a normal job that you you do your hours in the office and then you go home and forget about it. You know, we travel together, we are together when we train, but sometimes we are together after training as well, in a hotel or like sharing dinners, lunch, whatever. So it's a lot of hours together. So it's important to get along well.
Yeah, I would imagine. Okay. Do you have any guiding principles in your life that really support you and keep you connected? I think I asked it in a different way before, but is it, I don't want to water any thoughts for you, but what are those philosophies and guiding principles that for you?
Well, for me, like hard work, passion, and do what you want in life is the most important, you know. Whatever you choose to do has to be something that you're passionate about, and just put the effort and the work, and things eventually will work out, you know. And for me, I don't consider myself a super talented athlete. I guess I have some talent, but I work hard and I have a lot of passion about what I do. So that's for me the most important.
And is your passion, it doesn't sound like your passion is to win, but I didn't ask you that yet. Like, are you trying to be better than others or your best?
I love winning for sure, but I see winning as a consequence of the hard work and of the, you know, people tend to see as a, like crossing the finish line in the first position, and they don't see much more than that, but there's so much behind that, and all that work. For me, I know if I do things right, I have the chance to win, and then I have to do it the day of the race. But yeah, for me, winning is just the one more part of the sport, you know, which is very important. But there's a lot of things to focus as well, and a lot of work to do in order to achieve that. So I don't think that much specifically on that, but focus on trying to get better.
Okay. And just recently I think it was the Ironman in South Africa where you took third place. That, you know, I'm sure you had your sights on winning, but tell me about taking third. Tell me about that relationship between wanting to win, but also wanting to do your best. Like, I'd love to hear how you manage that.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like a third place could be really good or really bad, depending. For me, like in South Africa, I had physical problems. I had really bad side stitches, and I had to stop during the run. And I know that there's where I lost the race, you know. And so I feel disappointed and frustrated about that. There are other races like London Olympic Games. I got silver medal, but I know that I did the best race I could possibly do. And I'm really happy with that, really proud of that result, even though it wasn't enough to win. There was just someone faster than me, and I know the pace we ran. I know how I race tactically, and I know I did my best and I couldn't win. But there are other times that I got second and I felt really frustrated because I know I made mistakes and I could have done better. So that's what annoys me. But when I give my best, when I do a good race, you know, sometimes you win, sometimes you don't. If there's someone better, there's not much more you can do. The only thing is you can control is your strategy, the decisions you take during the race. And when I make mistakes is when I get a bit frustrated. But if I do things right and I don't win, I'm usually okay.
Okay. All right. And then are you a rule follower or risk taker? It sounds like more you stick to the rules.
I usually stick to the rules and control, and when I train, like, you know, I like know the times and know everything exactly, control everything around. But sometimes, yeah, you have to take different decisions and everything, things don't go as planned, but or as you have in mind. But I try to be like follow the rules.
And do you listen to music, or are you headphone free when you're in training?
I love music, and I play guitar myself my free time when I can. But and sometimes in some easy sessions I do listen to music. But for the simple fact that during the races you're not allowed to listen to music, when I have a hard session I try not to do it, and just to simulate the race situation and try to don't have that extra motivation that sometimes music is to go faster, because in the race you cannot listen to.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so you're doing as much you can to mirror race conditions, right? You're like, you're training in a hot human environment right now to match Kona.
I think that's important. Yeah.
What do you wear? Like, how do you make the choices of the gear that you wear? And I'm asking because I'm not sure what I'm going to wear. And I'd love to learn what it is that you're wearing.
Yeah, well, in my sport, there are so many decisions you have to take in terms of gear, like with the bike, different types of wheels, or depending on the conditions of the, if it's a tough course, if it's windy, or in terms of clothes you're wearing, depending on the conditions as well. Like in Kona, it's extremely hot and you have to calculate how much you should drink and how often you should drink, how much you should eat. So there's a lot to think. It's not just go as hard as you can from the gun. You have to think a lot and be very focused for a long time, which is not easy. So it's important too.
Do you wear long sleeves are you wearing long sleeves in the heat, or are you wearing like tank top, short sleeve?
Yeah, no, I don't wear long sleeves. I know some people do, but I think just put some sunblock to try not to burn myself. But long sleeve feels like it's going to be even hotter. So I don't know. I don't feel that comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how about like when the goggles that you're wearing and or the shoes that you're wearing?
Yeah, well, I've been training with the shoes I'm going to wear for quite a long time, and with On Shoes, my sponsor, and they have great stuff. So I've been training with different models of their shoes for the whole year. And I'm especially when you have to race a marathon in this tough conditions, it's easy to get blisters. So you need to be very confident with the stuff you're wearing, you know, from shoes to cycling shoes, for your helmet, with everything. So you shouldn't try new stuff for the day of the race, but everything you do, try to try.
Yeah. Before. Yeah. So then let's flip gears to recovery. What do you do after the hard trainings every day? Like, I'm enjoying compression. I'm enjoying some crowd therapy. I'm enjoying some soft tissue works and light stretching, meditation.
Yeah. The most important is to refuel, like, as soon as possible after a hard session, in terms of drink and food, have a snack and have like a recovery shake or something like that. And usually I work with my physio as well, like a massage, or help me with some stretching. Depends on the type of training I did before. But it requires time as well. So it's not just that you finish your hard work and you're free. You know, you have things to do after, and just to keep your body healthy to be able to train again the next day.
Yeah. And then what is the post-workout drink that you're doing? The post-workout drink. Is it carbohydrate based? Is it like something?
A mix. There's more protein as well, especially to recovery after training. And like my girlfriend most of the times make a good nice shake with recovery protein powder. But 226 is the brand that sponsors me. Mm-hmm. And she adds different stuff, like a banana or like some dry nuts and everything. Mm-hmm. That you need to recover the calories and the proteins, the carbohydrates, and also drink just water or something with electrolytes to recover everything you lost in your training.
Okay. And then during the event, are you using like carbohydrate-based drinks or electrolyte drinks or just pure water?
Yeah, and that's very important in a race like Kona where you're going to lose so much. It's actually the key of the race, being able to replace all the fluids and the calories that you need to take, which is not easy, you know, because you do your studies and they tell you you have to eat this many calories and drink this much. But in the end of the day, it's going to be that you have to drink for about, I don't know, 8 to 10 liters. And we use a lot of gels, like energy gels, which is just high carbohydrates, sugar, basically. And then you have to take about 20 of those. which is not easy for your stomach to digest, mm-hmm. especially under the stress of a competition. So you have to figure out yourself. Everyone works differently. What are you going to take? You know, some people like more solid stuff like energy bars. Other people just take gels and drinks. And in my case, I do a mix of both. I try to have a couple of energy bars to have something solid in my stomach, and also gels, and then with a drink also with carbohydrates and with electrolytes as well.
Mm, very cool. And so what do you have your heart set on for life? And I know you're coming up on Kona. I know you're training your ass off there. And like, if you go, obviously it sounds like you want to be your very best prepared mm-hmm. going into the race, to trust yourself, to work through the suffering, to be yeah. eloquent in the way that you show up and finish. And if you win, fantastic. And if you come in second, third, 10th, but you gave it your best, like, you know, okay. Right. And then if you go bigger, and you think about life mission, what do you have your heart set on?
Well, it's hard to know. Well, I mean, for me, I always wanted to be a top athlete and perform well. And I've already done that. I've been 5 times world champion in different distances, and now I'm excited about this challenging Kona. But for me, just enjoy life. I think it's the most important, you know, and enjoy what you do all the time. And that's a big success. So I just want to keep enjoying what I'm doing and being happy with my job. I can't think of having a job that I don't like. Like, unfortunately, some people do, you know. I just want to keep living this type of life. And when I retire, I would like to keep involved in the sport, because, you know, it's been my life, and obviously in all these years of being a professional, I learned a lot, and hopefully I can teach some kids or people who wants to train and be good at this. I can give them probably some advice.
Brilliant. And then if you had to give one little gem nugget of advice to, you know, the next generation of kids or executives in global workforces, what would that one little gem be?
Sometimes it depends on the people, but usually mm-hmm. it's important to know what you want in your life, you know, and sometimes that takes time to figure out, to know exactly what you want to do, what drives you, what's your passion, and once you know that, just work for it and don't get caught up in little things, you know, but just see the big picture, see the main goal, and try to work for that and have fun on the way.
You know, I bet people in your life love being around you.
Hopefully.
Yeah. I just get that sense. All right. So here's the last big banger. You know, how do you think about or define or articulate, or how do you think about this concept of mastery?
Well, yeah, that's a hard one. Well, I guess you need to, it's a matter of practice, you know, a matter of, going through different experiences and try to be open to learn and learn from people who know, more than you, especially when you're younger, when you're growing up, and try to be a sponge, you know, just absorb everything and work hard, you know, and with that you will just keep improving and be more and know more about yourself and know more about your sport, and just try to keep learning like that until you master what you're doing. But it takes time. It usually just takes time, you know.
It does. Yes, I respect that and understand that for sure. And I just want to say thank you for your time and best success.
Thank you very much. It was a great chat.
Yeah, for sure. And okay, so if people want to learn more about what you're up to and the race at Kona, they can also go to, is that on-running.com/Javi? Is that what it is?
Yeah, there you can follow me, my path.
And that's JAVI, on-running.com/Javi.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So thank you, Javi.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye.
All right. Thank you so much for diving into another episode of Finding Mastery with us. Our team loves creating this podcast and sharing these conversations with you. We really appreciate you being part of this community. And if you're enjoying the show, the easiest no-cost way to support is to hit the subscribe or follow button wherever you're listening. Also, if you haven't already, please consider dropping us a review on Apple or Spotify. We are incredibly grateful for the support and feedback. If you're looking for even more insights, we have a newsletter we send out every Wednesday. Punch over to findingmastery.com/newsletter to sign up. This show wouldn't be possible without our sponsors, and we take our recommendations seriously. And the team is very thoughtful about making sure we love and endorse every product you hear on the show. If you want to check out any of our sponsor offers you heard about in this episode, you can find those deals at findingmastery.com/sponsors. And remember, no one does it alone. The door here at Finding Mastery is always open to those looking to explore the edges and the reaches of their potential so that they can help others do the same. So join our community, share your favorite episode with a friend, and let us know how we can continue to show up for you. Lastly, as a quick reminder, information in this podcast and from any material on the Finding Mastery website and social channels is for information purposes only. If you're looking for meaningful support, which we all need, one of the best things you can do is to talk to a licensed professional. So seek assistance from your healthcare providers. Again, a sincere thank you for listening. Until next episode, be well, think well, and keep exploring.